Thank you. It was wonderful being here. I had a great warm introduction and warm greetings from the U of M coaching staff when I arrived on campus earlier. My job is to introduce the speakers for today, and I will do that individually because we want to make sure that we remember who we are listening to as we get into this excitement of new technology in the 21st century. Our first session will explore the impact of technology on government. Our first speaker is Jerry Meckling, a lecturer in public policy and director of the Leadership for a Networked World program at the Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. His studies focus on the impacts of information and digital technologies on individual, organizational, and societal issues. And he consults on these and other topics with public and private organizations both locally and internationally. He has previously served as an aide to the mayor and assistant administrator of the New York City Environmental Protection Administration. He has been director of the Office of Management and Budget for the City of Boston. He earned a master's degree in public administration, a doctorate in economics and public affairs from the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University, and is a fellow at the National Academy of Public Administration. Please welcome Mr. Jerry Meckling.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be in Minnesota. You've maybe heard the phrase of those people who can do six impossible things before breakfast. Well, I'm going to need a little help from you to do at least two difficult things, at least for professors, after lunch. There is no professor who really looks forward to the lecture that's after lunch, and we all know why. So we'll try to make it short. That will help. But that runs into the second difficulty, which is, as a professor, you're sort of trained to teach in 80 or 90-minute blocks. And this idea of 12 minutes, which we're going for now, is a real challenge. I hope we'll succeed. The central theme that I want to try to address in 12 minutes, as I look at how other governments around the world are looking to use information technology to make a change, the central theme is that as a leadership group, your primary challenge is good judgment on the changes that are facing Minnesota. It's the change agenda that will be the critical thing that will make or break this state for the future. And the point I'm making is that while the presenting problems will be those that we talked about a lot this morning, education, K through 12 education, higher education, healthcare as it goes, driven by demographics, into being a huge budget changer for the future, those are the ways the issues present themselves. But the solutions behind the scene will often be taking advantage of what the information age provides. It will be using information differently, not just because it's there, but because you can reorganize how we do things. And if you don't do it in Minnesota, there are people all over the globe pushed by the same pressures that you are, who will redefine jobs, relocate those jobs, redefine institutions, relocate those institutions. And the collaborations between the public and the private sector to handle those choices of change and to make them happen well will be the real difference, I think, in whether this is a good legislature or not. And what I want to try to do is to try to present to you some ideas from a set of folks who have a position very much like yours. There's two Minnesotans in this group, but we've been working for a number of years on the kinds of changes governments are coping with, driven by technology. And I want to, in 12 minutes, hopefully, say, what is this problem that we are all trying to face? Where are we now in terms of trying to solve it? And then what will the future look like? How will it be different? What will be the challenges for leaders in coping well with the future? So what's the problem? Simply, the problem is, how do we get our work done? This is supposed to be people trying to do some work with specialized tasks. They each do their own piece. They hand it off to the next party. Ultimately, it's done, and we hand it off at the end. A thing to note is that ever since people have been around, we found it better to work with other people and to have specialties. There is a division of labor. We specialize because we get better at that which we do many times, and because we naturally want to go to where our comparative advantage is. So we work together in specialized tasks. We're most productive that way. That's good news. The difficult news is if you break a piece of work into pieces and give them to different people, you've got to get it back together again. You've got to coordinate it. You have to govern it. And it's the governance challenge that's really interesting. How have we done that over time? Well, we've said, let the people share a goal and they'll work it out for themselves. Markets do this very well. So a lot of coordination and governance takes place by mutual adjustment by individuals who share a goal. Doesn't do enough. Because we've added two very important things. One is, don't do it just any way you feel like it. Let's standardize and get some rules, some standard operating procedures. We'll then hand this work off more efficiently over time. That's one tool we use. The other tool we've used is, when you need coordination, put somebody in charge. Give the authority to someone to coordinate things. So we do this, and we've done this. For thousands of years, for hundreds of years, and in the last century, we've gotten really good at having elaborate divisions of labor coordinated through rules and a hierarchy. Bureaucracy, we call it. It was a good news word 100 years ago. It's become the bad word, news word now. That's what we do. We care if it works well, if it's productive, if it's fair in how it divides the labor up and gives stuff back. And if all the difficult governance issues that you face and we face in life in other places are considered legitimately resolved, that is the motive for who's doing something the public good or some private distortion of that? This is all backdrop, because what we really care about is, so what difference does technology make in this division of labor and for you? So that's what we want to move to pretty quickly. What's the problem? What can you do differently? One thing you can use the internet for is to simply take that last step and say, whatever service we have, we're going to give it to you over the internet. We're going to make it available online, not in line. It's going to be available 24 hours a day from wherever you are. You don't have to stop what you're doing and come down to the government and stand in line and get told you forgot to bring the pink form. So that's a very important thing we've done, and that's been what e-government has largely been for a decade. Don't underestimate how important it is to take that single step in the process and make it accessible. But there's two other major moves that we're moving into that we've talked about, but we haven't really done much of. And that's what your challenge is really going to be. Continuing step one and adding to that step two, a much more controversial and difficult step, because almost everybody's job will change as you can look up stuff quickly and you don't have to hand it off to somebody else. You can have a simplified work process and fewer layers in the hierarchy. You're not working just the last step, which is the distribution step. You're working every step in the production process to see if it can be simplified and changed and reorganized. That's the word that used to be called reengineering. It's coming back in a deadly and global form if what you want is the current job you've got, because the current job is not going to succeed. It's the new work. And beyond that, we can often say within our organization, we don't only change the individual jobs and work processes, we can often get to the point where we say, okay, we'll be inside and we'll outsource some of this stuff to other places in a value chain that involve other institutions. And we'll have a boundary here that could be the program between one program, a boundary of authority between one program and another, one agency and another, all across the state government as an enterprise. The cross-jurisdictional boundaries and institutions that represent the state government and the counties and the local cities and towns and the federal government, the sectors of the economy that are the public-private collaborations. This, I believe, is production reform, which is harder, and then the outsourcing, which is the hardest. Now, where are we in doing those three major reforms enabled by and to some extent driven by information technology and its ability to let you organize differently? What have we done? What remains to be done? Basically, through this new division of labor, what we have done is we've learned a lot in classic learning curve style. Over time, we've worked vertically. We've gotten better at getting more people and more programs to offer this online, not inline thing. We've got better access to services. We've done some other things, but the real core task in governments around the globe for the last decade has been online, not inline. What we're finding is that many folks, driven by economic pressures globally, where the private sector sits on an infrastructure that the public sector provides, and if it's not efficient here, now that they can take the job and put it elsewhere, they will take the job. They must take the job and put it elsewhere. So we're getting into production reform and cross-boundary transformation. I want to give you a few examples in a few more minutes and then be done. One-stop customer service. It's not just online customer service. If you go to New Brunswick in Canada and now to Service Canada throughout Canada, they are using the same systems that support you online to reorganize the individual offices of government. So they've reduced the number of field offices but made them all one-stop. You don't go to an isolated place to get a fishing and permit or any of the programs independently. They have all become complete delivery operations for everything that's involved in New Brunswick. Can you do cross-boundary integration to have customer service handled by phone, by internet, by face-to-face, by mail, in a consistent fashion? People are working on that. Electronic healthcare records. Healthcare is big. We make a lot of mistakes. People die, have 22% of the cost going to just the paperwork. We all know that there are electronic ways to improve this, but it's very hard to go beyond the individual institutions to get the entire industry and the government to collaborate enough to say we can create them, they will be safe enough, and we will be able to standardize enough to get it throughout that industry and take some of that enormous cost out of the system and offer a lot better service back into it. Very cross-boundary, transformational. It's not just the government. It's the government in its relation to other institutions. Shared administrative services or, California has 284 different email systems in the state. As Peter said this morning, if the governor of California thinks big thoughts, among the big thoughts that he's thinking about and everybody else is thinking about is the degree to which you can take specialized support service people out of individual programs, put them in a larger, more efficient shared service operation across the state, and have it actually work, because the individual departments will always be very suspicious, and sometimes rightly so, that you're going to leave them stranded. Another example, however, of cross-boundary transformation, which is the new challenge that I think you'll be facing. Regional broadband and wireless. If you haven't looked at the One Cleveland, now called One Community, effort to get ultra-broadband speeds into Northeast Ohio, you might want to look at that because it's an interesting opportunity to bring an entrepreneurial class of new companies and new jobs into an area where, you know, the future highways are still the information highway and not just the transportation that we talked about at lunch. Emergency local surge capacity. Emergency response is almost always local for the first 24 or 48 hours. And can we now have shared understandings of where the backhoes and the Caterpillar tractors and the water supplies and the tents and the medical supplies are that can be readily shared in emergency situations? Well, there are people who are working on this largely through now the National Council on Readiness and Preparedness and former Governor Gilmore of Virginia. Interesting work being done, cross-boundary transformation. Environmental data sharing. nationally for the environment. It's the federal government that passes laws, but it's the states and local officials that have to report against that, and the industry that has a great interest in those things to standardize, to not have to repetitively pick up the same stuff manually and put it in can be a huge difference. So they're just example after example of the next wave as cross-boundary transformation. The very fundamentals of this, and I will conclude on this, is to not think that the kind of change that's happening in the global economy, which is enabled by technology, is a technology problem. It's a leadership problem. We have people naturally and appropriately scared to death about their jobs, their kids' jobs, and where things are going to be. So it will be a bitterly competitive time across the globe where leaders are going to have to understand the challenge and be able to work together. So we think the three descriptors of the Minnesota legislature that you should strive for, if you're going to win here, you want to become active, partner-oriented, and adaptive. Active because most people would rather this problem just go away. Most people will not look to you to stir up the need to do something. In the short run, it will almost always be easier to paper things over. That, I think, is a mistake for your long-term stewardship responsibilities for this state. Partner-oriented is not just what the state does. It's what you do with other levels of government and the private sector. And it's adaptive. We don't know, in many cases, what will work here. So you've got to hold people's feet to the fire. It's like a pressure cooker. You've got to put enough pressure on for these issues to get movement, but you have to be a good enough leader to know when it's about to blow up. There will be blow-ups. The real question that I'm leaving you with is you don't want Minnesota to be the frog. We have heard that frogs, if thrown into boiling water, will notice immediately and jump out. Now, they may be a little unhappy and a little singed, but they will be alive and they will thrive. But if you put them into water and slowly turn up the heat until it boils, by the time their system realizes there's a problem, they have lost the capability to save themselves. And many people believe that governments are like frogs. So my challenge to you is don't let Minnesota be the frog. In that regard, thanks. Almost 12 minutes, maybe a little bit too much. Good luck. I want to hear from you.
Next, we will hear from Mr. Vance Opperman, President and CEO of Key Investment Incorporated and CEO and General Counsel of two media companies, publishing Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities Business Monthly, Minnesota Law and Politics, and Washington Law and Politics. Mr. Opperman has served as president of West Publishing Company.